Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Matt Cornell from Bruin Outfitting and Guide Service up on Lake Winnipeg. Matt is a longtime guide. He's been guiding his whole career is like 30 years, three decades, and we get to know him in this interview. It's just really, really fun. Matt's such a great guy, and his fishing stories are so great. It's just fun, again, to get to know him. And in Lake Winnipeg, where he guides now full-time in the winter, he's been doing it for a lot of years. Just listening to his history and just his stories of working on this lake for so many years, it's just a lot of fun. And it's a great time of year to be doing it because, you know, they're building thick ice up there as we speak, and this season is going to kick off. I know many of you have either been up there or are planning a trip to go up to Lake Winnipeg, and it's just fun to talk about it. And Matt is one of those guys that he just speaks very well to that body of water. So there's a lot to learn and a lot to just get excited about for this ice season, talking about Lake Winnipeg with one of the guys. And it's a long time coming. I've known Matt for a handful of years now, just through the industry, and he's a great dude, and just really, really fun to finally get him on the podcast. So let's get to it. We've got Lake Winnipeg walleyes with Matt Cornell. Preparing for the upcoming ice fishing season means making great gear choices that will help you maximize your time on the water. That's where Summit Fishing Equipment comes in. The trusted choice for anglers who demand reliable, affordable, and top-quality forward-facing sonar gear and accessories for all the major brands, including Garmin LiveScope, Lowrance Active Target, and Hummingbird Mega Live. Check out their bestseller, the Summit HD CNC Shuttle. It's designed to protect your expensive electronics from harsh winter conditions while keeping everything portable for easy transport. You could pair that up with the lightweight yet robust carbon fiber ice transducer pole and the versatile Summit bag to complete the setup. Crafted from advanced carbon fiber, this forward sonar pole is not only incredibly strong, but also the lightest on the market. Their offerings don't stop at just poles and shuttles. Summit Fishing Equipment offers a full range of bags, mounts, and accessories to customize your fishing rig to your exact specifications. So whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started, Summit has what you need to improve your experience on the ice. Explore Summit's collection at summitfishingequipment.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Summit Fishing Equipment is also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Zuloff Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zuloff Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zuloff Construction at their website, zuloffconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. We should go back a little bit. I kind of want to talk about your origin story. Like, where did you grow up in fishing? I want to talk about, you know, your passion for fishing. Like, where did that all start for you, man? Where are you from? Where did you cut your teeth in fishing? Where does this whole story of your career begin?
Well, for me, I mean, it starts like so many kids. It starts with your dad, you know, and my dad was probably my biggest inspiration in fishing growing up. I mean, he was the guy I did it all with. He was the guy that wanted to go. He was the guy that showed me the different opportunities that we had at our fingertips. And I was pretty blessed like this as a child, because my dad was a half owner with his brother, my uncle Robert, in a lake house on the Winnipeg River. So that's the river that flows between Lake of the Woods and Lake Winnipeg. It's the outflow from Lake of the Woods into Lake Winnipeg. And so we had a summer house on this in an area of Manitoba called the Whiteshell Provincial Park. And in that area, there's dozens and dozens of fishable lakes with like a multitude of species. You know, everything from trout to crappie, walleye, whitefish, bass, pike, it was all in there. And so I got to grow up fishing all these places close at hand, and I really didn't know how lucky I was until later on in life. But I mean, looking back now, it was the chisel in the mold of where it started for sure. And so I'd have to point to that as, you know, where at least the fire ignited and whatnot. And that was always the place I wanted to get away from. And my best friend still to this day is somebody I met there. And I mean, we grew up as kids. My dad gave me my own boat when I was 11. And it wasn't much, but it was like a 12-foot little kind of John Boat style fiberglass with a 9-9. And I'd pick my buddy Chad up. He lived a couple cabins down from me. And we'd be on the water from dawn to dusk every day that we could. And that's kind of just what we did.
At what point in time did you feel like fishing was going to be your career?
You know, that was a tough one. And I don't think in terms of a career, I mean, I was always interested in the tournament stuff and you know, getting involved in that somehow. It was fishing shows were my cartoon. I would get up in the morning and we would watch like it was every morning. It was the In Fisherman, Roland Martin, Orlando Wilson, Bill Dance, and those were my cartoons growing up. So I always, you know, had a dream to do it. I didn't really know anything about the guiding and tourism aspect of it until later in life. I actually got started guiding to pay for a university degree.
Oh, nice.
To help out with that. You know, it wasn't really going to be a career until, you know, I'd started looking at school. And so I got my first guiding job when I was 18, come to help put myself through school. That's where that started. And I really didn't see it as a career until I started making more money doing it than the people that I graduated school with.
And where were you guiding early on? Like kind of where, what was your setup?
Well, my first job, I got thrown into the lines dead as an 18-year-old kid up on Great Bear Lake in the Northwest Territories.
Oh my.
Yeah. One of the biggest lakes in the world, chasing lake trout when I was a teenager. I look back on it now and man, was I dumb.
How did you get up there? Like, what was the connection up there?
Well, Plumber's Lodge, who is probably the most famous, you know, lodge in that area on the two, like, Great Slave Lake and Great Bear Lake. They have an office in Winnipeg, which is where I grew up. That's their head office. The owner's from that area or lives there anyhow. And, you know, so I actually had a friend that was applying for a job there. And I thought, man, that'd be a cool idea. And I ended up getting the job and he didn't. So it was a little awkward that way, but I mean, I wasn't going to pass up the opportunity.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, if it had been the other way around, you'd have been probably a supportive buddy. So.
Absolutely. And I probably would have, you know, happily finished out in my career as a wetland ecologist and not knowing anything about guiding.
Did you end up finishing school then?
I did. Yeah, I did.
Oh man. So you got that ecology degree. I mean, that's got to fit in a little bit. I mean that, you know, I mean the outdoorsy passion, understanding, you know, nature and ecosystems and all that. I mean, that's got to have somewhat of an impact on, you know, just your professional career today.
I think it lends to a perspective that I don't think I would have had otherwise. Certainly.
Yeah.
You know, and a respect and an understanding maybe for the natural cycle of things and the relationships that, you know, we experience but probably don't heed so readily when we're out there, you know, making our way in the outdoors, hunting and fishing.
You obviously embrace, you know, the guiding and your job and how you make money, but also just, you know, being a, you know, just being a representative, being a conservationist. Like, I'm sure that, you know, your clients obviously appreciate those kind of conversations, that you're just like, you're that kind of guy that just appreciates nature and everything, man. I know I appreciate that about you for sure. I'm curious about that.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think that's important too. I mean, you don't have to be. To be a guide, you can go out and guide every day and make money and just go home.
Yeah.
And, you know, go in every year and just kind of take what gives you. But, you know, some of you guys, you know, you look at the big picture of things, and we need guys out there like you too. We need your voice. We need to have these conversations and talk about those things as well as the fishing. For sure. You know, I don't even know how much we got to get into that, but just making that point, I think, is important.
If I may, I think that the life of the sportsman as a population and as a group is always on the verge of being threatened. And if we don't try to look outside that and look at our impact and our relationship with the environment that we're accessing and the opportunities we're accessing and how we affect them, then I think we're missing a huge opportunity to be, you know, for real effective advocacy, to support our own cause, not just, you know, to nature and conservation, but our cause as sportsmen and women going forward.
Yeah. I think that, you know, when you mostly, I think this is true. There isn't no statistic out there that's going to prove me right or wrong, I don't think. But, you know, for professional, you know, guides and outfitters, you know, hunting or fishing, if you have a long lasting career, I think there's a common thread there. Majority of individuals, eventually, even if you don't have it, you know, out the gate, even if you don't have the education going in, you have to start to realize that if you're going to be hunting or fishing in an area for a while, eventually you're going to have those experiences, or maybe it's a down year or whatever it is. Like, you're going to see those ups and downs in your area, in your, you know, whatever you're guiding for, whatever you're, you know, wherever you're located. Those, you know, Mother Nature is gonna educate you on her own almost. And I think that, you know, most of the good guys that have been around for a long time, you know, even if they don't have that education, you almost eventually have to think about that to some extent and start kind of, you know, getting involved in such a way, or just with your decision making and how you operate a little bit and educate people. As the people that don't, you know, if they do over harvest, or they do, you know, if they do just kind of forget about that, or, you know, don't pay attention to the impact, and they do just take all the time, eventually your business is going to have a crash too. Like, you're going to crash with it. And, you know, some of those guys just don't survive that.
You know? Yeah, I absolutely. And I mean, you know, we as anglers, sports people, we do love to think of ourselves as conservationists. And I think we do a great job on that in a lot of ways. But at least I know in the Winnipeg environment specifically, or maybe more profoundly, the angling community tends to look outside the box at other factors. I mean, you know, most notably the commercial fishing that goes on in Lake Winnipeg, to, you know, to point to things that affect fish behavior and the lake and whatnot. And they remain totally agnostic to the fact that, well, you know, on March, there's 5,000 of us out there on a 5x18 mile area chasing after these fish. And there's no way that we don't produce behavioral changes or you know, environmental changes, or, you know, have an impact on that quarry that we're chasing.
Yeah, and it affects your decision making too when you're trying to find fish, right? Like good anglers like can understand fishing pressure as being part of the structure you gotta pay attention to.
Without question. Oh yeah. And that's a monster on Winnipeg.
Yeah.
You know, when you're chasing giant schools of fish in 3 or 4 feet of water, like I know you've seen us do. And there's trucks and, you know, augers drilling around all over the place. If you think that's not going to do something, you know, sometime to your benefit even, but it's going to happen.
Yeah. If you can get ahead of it.
Yeah,
for sure, man, for sure. But I'm still so curious. I want to go back to starting out your career in Northwest Territories, guiding for lake trout, dude. I did not know that about you. That's, yeah, literally like drinking from the fire hose.
you know, right out of the gate, man. From a guiding perspective, you know, just the environment that you're in, the people. I'm sure your clientele, you know, that was a huge, massive trip for them. And so, like, doing a good job and being a good guide, I'm sure that was an unbelievable education up there, man. You had to have some big takeaways, or there's got to be a story or two from that first season that we could hear.
Oh, God. There's many, you know, and so, you know, we're going back to 1997 now to tap into those memories. And, you know, I'm as green as they come, you know, as wet behind the ears as anyone ever has been in that situation. Teenager kid, come out of university and thrown into one of the most epic environments someone can imagine. If you haven't ever been up to the high Arctic, the Northwest Territories, or, you know, the Barren Lands in general, the descriptions don't do it justice. It is one of the most epic and beautiful environments you could ever find. It's the most vast untamed wilderness that I've ever experienced personally. And, you know, you throw that around and you mix that in with you know, ancient runes from ancient caribou hunters, and runes from Hudson Bay explorers that perished on the land. It's the area itself is its own story. But, you know, so I show up there. Absolutely no idea. I don't even know if I brought rain gear. I may have brought my old wet skins, you know, but we get thrown out there, and you got an 18-foot Alumarine aluminum boat with bench seats and, you know, a swivel seat for the captain if you're feeling fancy. I had an old Humminbird transducer mounted to a piece of 1x4. I may have even had an electrical tape on. There was electrical tape in the mix there somewhere. And then C-clamped onto the transom of the boat, you know, and you're pouring through this clear, crystal clear water, going over everything. And my first year, I hadn't purchased a GPS yet. We were still doing map and compass, you know, and it's the DSARM where I was at what they call the main lodge on Great Bear Lake. So it housed 50 guests, 27, 28 guides. And the DSARM is about 30 miles across. Well, you get out there and you don't see a whole bunch of land.
Yeah.
All the time. You know, and I remember coming through, like, one of the scariest moments of my life was that first year, and trying to rip from the lodge all the way across to the DSARM to this place called the Bloody River. And it was pea soup fog. And there's still chunks of ice floating around. And, you know, I'm just ripping as fast as this 35 horse two-stroke Merc will push this boat. My two customers looking straight ahead. For all intents, they probably think I'm the most experienced guide out there. I'd only been on the lake 3 days. I had no idea where I was going other than somebody told me that there was going to be good fishing at the mouth of the Bloody River, and I had a map and a compass that would point me there. And we start ripping, and we get into this fog, and it's so thick, and I'm like, I think I'm lost. But, you know, you don't, when you're that young and dumb, you don't stop. You just go faster.
Yeah. Like, eventually you're going to see shore, or what are you looking for, you know?
Yeah, well, you'd hope that the fog cleared before you saw shore. Because, I mean, it was thick. Like, I'm talking 10, 15-yard visibility.
Oh.
You know? And so, finally, I'm like, man, we got to be there, like, right away. You know, because I'm kind of keeping time on my watch and I'm looking at my compass. I'm like, my bearing's good. I'm pretty sure, but I can't see anything. And this is so crazy thick fog, icy calm. And then all of a sudden, I just feel the boat go boom, boom, boom. And just over the waves. I was like, what the hell is that? I look back and that's a boat wake. I cut the motor, and I hear guys yelling. So I do a kind of a bit of a shit hook around, and I look, and it's one of the other guys, this guy named Ed Ledden, and he's screaming at me because I just drove over his lines.
Oh, my.
And he's sitting out here. So I look at him, and I go, where are we? And he's like, the Bloody River. And I was like, perfect, guys, let's fish. But I almost killed us.
Oh, man.
That's the reality of it. We almost died. And so I was a little bit more hesitant after that, but it got me out of my shell anyways.
Never, ever, ever going to forget that, dude. I'm sure your clients never forgot it either, man. But I bet the fishing was incredible up there.
The fishing was stellar. And I mean, like, we caught some absolutely epic lake trout. I had some spectacular days. And it's not like lake trout fishing. At least we weren't lake trout fishing like I did later in my career in other places. We were catching these fish sometimes in 5-6 feet of water. It was huge, 50 plus pound fish. We got a couple 70 pounders while I was up there, and just absolutely incredible fishing.
Oh, man. So then fast forward. So you're doing that to pay through school. You finish school. We talk about that. At what point in time, like, how did you get to where you're at today with, you know, your own outfit that you own and operate on Lake Winnipeg?
Well, so I left Plumbers after 4 years. That was the lodge on Great Bear. And this is the real kickstart to my career, was when I got hired on to work at a place called Scott Lake Lodge. I ran on the border of Saskatchewan and the Northwest Territories. And it was a different place with a whole different mantra. And I guarantee you, I wouldn't be where I am now if it wasn't for that place. It was run by a fellow named Tom Klein, originally from Wisconsin, moved to Montana. I think he's back in Wisconsin now. Anyways, great guy. And he was a past customer of the lodge under its former owners. And he bought the place. And he had a dream to turn it into a customer service dedicated fishing lodge. And so everything that they focused on there was putting your customers first, you know, giving them the experience that they wanted, learning how to focus on them, and evolving as professional guide. And they had a great incentive package to promote this that they called the guide retreat, where your first year, you know, they would go on a trip every year and they'd take the entire guide staff. And your first year, you had to pay half. And then the lodge would pay half. And every year you stayed on, they'd pay for 10% more. So after 5 years, your trips were free. I mean, we went everywhere in Bahamas, the Yucatan, Costa Rica, Brazil, all over the place. You know, Kiribati, Christmas Island, and incredible fishing opportunities. But the whole purpose of it was for the guides to gain perspective of what it was like to be a client in a foreign area where they weren't familiar with the fishing, the gear, the tackle, the approach, or anything, and have that experience, you know, from the client's perspective. And it punches home like nothing else, because you're living it, you know? Now you're there on your trip of a lifetime, and, like, what are you going to do when you got a shit guide? How are you going to react? You know, and you got to see it from there, and man, it absolutely, completely changed my approach.
Dude, that's crazy.
And how you looked at it. I don't think I could thank them enough for lighting that fire of customer service, because that's still what drives us, and I think that's still what drives my referral and my business today is that. It is having, you know, that opportunity to see those, to gain those perspectives that we had there. And, you know, they were a great lodge and popular lodge, and they're full the entire season. So I got to guide every day, you know, and when you do that in an environment like that, you just get more polished, you know, so, you know, and you're, you start getting like the big tips, and you know, you start making money, and you're on the water all the time, and you're getting your success fishing, and you know, now your customers are becoming friends, and they're inviting you down to see them, and whatnot, and everything just starts snowballing into this perfect storm of you evolving into a professional guide and just shaping your ship the way you want it and the way you think it should be run to keep that ball rolling and just and getting bigger and better all the time.
Dude, that's phenomenal experience. So then how old were you when you broke off and went on your own?
Well, Bruin Outfitting was started in its current form in 2004 as a hunting and fishing operation. And, you know, I did that in the off seasons, but I stayed at Scott Lake for, I think, 17 summers. Yeah, it was just, you know, the money was good. Like I see, like I've already covered, the opportunities are incredible. Absolutely stellar team from the guys that cleaned the place up and picked up the garbage to the cooks, to the staff, everything was top. And it was all dialed. So there was no reason to leave.
Yeah.
You know, and it just made me better at the stuff that I was doing on my own.
Yeah.
But, you know, eventually you got to settle down and plant some roots. So we came back to this and full time here in 2013, you know, with some exceptions of doing some short stints back up at Scott Lake.
But you've been full time in the winters basically since 2013.
No, I mean, for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
since 2009.
Preparing for the upcoming ice fishing season means making great gear choices that will help you maximize your time on the water. That's where Summit Fishing Equipment comes in. The trusted choice for anglers who demand reliable, affordable, and top-quality forward-facing sonar gear and accessories for all the major brands, including Garmin LiveScope, Lowrance Active Target, and Hummingbird Mega Live. Check out their bestseller, the Summit HD CNC Shuttle. It's designed to protect your expensive electronics from harsh winter conditions while keeping everything portable for easy transport. You could pair that up with the lightweight yet robust carbon fiber ice transducer pole and the versatile Summit bag to complete the setup. Crafted from advanced carbon fiber, this forward sonar pole is not only incredibly strong, but also the lightest on the market. Their offerings don't stop at just poles and shuttles. Summit Fishing Equipment offers a full range of bags, mounts, and accessories to customize your fishing rig to your exact specifications. So whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started, Summit has what you need to improve your experience on the ice. Explore Summit's collection at summitfishingequipment.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Summit Fishing Equipment is also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. So let's talk a little bit about Winnipeg. I just want to hear more of your stories of that, you know, getting into guiding on Winnipeg in the winter full time and the fishing and the guiding and what the fishing has been like up there. I mean, we hear a lot of stories about it. You know, Winnipeg isn't like some brand new story that nobody's ever heard of. I think we understand that it's like an unbelievable opportunity, but I still think, you know, there's still a lot of people that, you know, they go up there, whether it's DIY or whatever, and everybody still has questions about the fishing and it's an evolving thing, you know, and only people like you that have been up there every season for a lot of seasons, you know, can see those ups and downs and the trends and the change in the fishing, you know, and just everything that goes on there and all the curveballs that the lake and Mother Nature throws at you. Like, I'm just kind of curious about that, like memorable experiences
that sort of describe your career on Winnipeg?
Well, I mean, Winnipeg would be the southern cold, you know, version of what the Northwest Territories and that environment was to me when I first started. It's epic. It's mean. It's its own force. You know, and it challenges you every day. And I think that's one of the allure of the lake itself is that it's that ever elusive potential and possibility, right? You know, that fish that everybody's looking for, it's out there for sure. But you are going to have to go through hell on that lake more times, more days than not to be able to get there because it's mean. You know, so it is, I mean, sure, you know, it's a monster. The South Basin that we fish is just one giant basin. You know, there's some little bottom undulations and little pieces of structure here and there. And there's some hidden jewels in places that you'll figure out if you fish it enough. But the reality is it's the greatest place to have a guide service because it isn't structure oriented. You know, some people coming up can't just look at a map and say, well, I'm going to go there. That looks like a good spot. They can't. We have a saying that you're only as good as your last good spot because you're chasing roaming pods of fish. You know, and sometimes they're chasing bait. Sometimes they're just there. Sometimes they're just moving through. But they're never just kind of sitting on a piece of structure like they are in a lot of lakes. There's no weed beds that they sit on, no big rock piles or anything like that really attract them. And so for me, it's great because people can come up and yeah, you can have spectacular DIY fishing, you know, but 9 times out of 10, it's hard to find them because it's just so huge. And so people end up fishing the packs, you know, with the other people, and they're kind of just looking around where people are and looking for hook sets and people yelling and whatnot. But the reality is there's so much fish to be had out there away from the crowds. And being on your own out there is structure in itself because those crowds will move fish around.
Yeah, I definitely wanted to dig into that a little bit. Like, it's not structure oriented in the sense of the word, like where it's like map study is going to, you're not going to find all the sweet spots. You know, you can't go into a trip up there. Now I find it fascinating because, you know, where we're at, like reservoir fishing, whatever, it's like a structure playground, you know, like everywhere we fish around here. I mean, you're talking about just like endless acres. And so it's like, where do you start? Like you say, if you're going to do a DIY deal, it's like you look out there and you might get some waypoints from a friend that fished there last year. But what does that get you? You know, it's like, but I'm curious about, you know, guys like you that have fished there for a lot of years. You know, what was that like? You know, I mean, and the type of equipment that you have and the technology that you had, say, 10, 15 years ago has a big play in this. But like learning how to be effective out there, the recipe for success, when you look back and you started having success out there early on in your career, like what did that look like? Was it the same? Do you feel like it was kind of the same recipe for success as it is now? Or what did that feel like when you look back on it?
You know, if you can kind of just, you know, look at time all at once and look at the days that you have successful, you know, that are successful now versus then, I'd say a lot of the recipes are the same, but as technology evolved, you didn't really understand why, you know? And so when we first started, I mean, yeah, a lot of it was just literally moving around and fish. I mean, we didn't, live sonar was not in existence. You know, you had a Vexilar and if that,
yeah,
you know, and you'd drill a hole and you'd have to fish. You know, and you better hope that you're in a period of decent fish activity because if not, they're just laying dormant and you're fishing and you're not catching anything and you move to the next spot thinking, well, there's nothing there. You know, meanwhile, you could have just driven over a mega pod of fish that just wasn't active. And that happens. You know, Winnipeg, for all its renown and glory, the fish can still be fish. They can still turn on and off like walleye anywhere. And now coming forward into today's time with live imaging, I think what we used to call, you know, now we've, you know, kind of transitioned to what used to be kind of like an intuition or just a hunch that you shouldn't move at times, is now confirmed with live imaging. And I think that's one of the biggest changes we've had, you know, where, you know, I used to kind of just, man, like, I know there's fish here. I just want to wait it out, you know, and then you'd have success sometimes. Or it's just like, I just feel like they've moved on, you know, and you'd move and you'd have success.
And, you know, another big part of that, you know, just like the question that we get all the time, like the questions that I get all the time from, you know, friends, family, just write-ins, people that are just curious about it. If they're going up there for the first time, we also probably know a little bit more now, like the walleyes up there, especially the big ones. If you're targeting the big ones, you know, people would probably be aware that they should probably maybe beef up their setup a little bit just for like hooking and landing big fish. But even just talking about, you know, the baits that you use and how you fish them is just so unlike anywhere else that we fish big walleyes. You know, like,
yeah.
And I'm sure you see this in your clients so often, especially first time clients. You know, and I'm just kind of curious about that story of like learning how to trigger these fish, and our better understanding that we have nowadays with, you know, just, you know, violent jigging strokes with big spoons at times can be so effective that, again, that's cadences that you would only ever probably use in front of a lake trout.
Yeah. Oh. Well, and that, I mean, that's some of the fishing that's changed so dramatically. And, you know, 15 years ago, you wouldn't see a rattle trap or a bait, you know, a body bait in an ice fishing display at a show. No one used those.
Right.
And now they're everywhere. It's everywhere. You know, like I remember going out there and tying frozen minnows onto one hook with a willow, just a willow branch, when I was a kid, and catching fish like that. And God, now we look at it now, and now we're using, you know, 2¾ or 3.5 inch, or like, you know, rip and wrap number 7 stuff. And there's nothing like the feeling of getting your wrist broke by a giant walleye in 5 feet of water while you're ripping a rattle bait.
Yeah,
it's. I mean, because that just doesn't happen in other places, you know. You're giving like 3-4 foot strokes of this thing and letting it free fall into, so it's kicking up all sorts of mud. And then all of a sudden, you know, your wrist just gets cocked over and your rod is buckled with a 10-pounder in 5 feet.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just think that's such a big part of the story. It's such a big part of the story of Winnipeg for people that go there. And then you come back. If you've had any... you know, any amount of success on a trip up there, you come home and right away, like, those are the big parts of the stories that are told, you know, in these fishing camps down here, where it's like, what happened up on Winnipeg? It's like, oh man, you wouldn't believe the baits we were using and what it felt like when they just hit you on the dead run. It truly is something to be had. But I think it's interesting that was, you know, ultimately discovered by a lot of you guys. You know, I mean, you were there. You know, I mean, I've heard these stories, and when a lot of that stuff began, I mean, it's like when you're talking about, you know, in, you know, talking about 2009, 2010, I mean, those were some glory years. And I think, you know, we talk about the great year classes, and maybe you can touch on this, you know, some of the great years that really introduced Lake Winnipeg and the opportunity that it is today to so many of us down here in the States, you know, as all these big fish that were being caught and these great year classes that were carrying the load. But it was also a lot of guys that were pioneering how to catch them. It's like they'd been there for a long time, but figuring out how to catch them, you know, was and is a big part of the story.
Yeah. And, you know, and I have to say, I mean, I'm like, it's good that I was out there on those breaking years. I think the credit to that, to the rattle bait technique, you know, I'm not sure who started it, you know, from scratch, but the people I would credit it to here would probably be Roger Stearns and Alex Kessler, were the first ones to really talk about rattle traps and rattle baits for walleye. And I mean, you know, that was when Lake Winnipeg was, you would never see a permanent house out towards the mouth of the Red River, you know, or what we call the flats and whatnot. It was still untouched, very, very no man's land sort of territory out towards the middle there. And when you start dropping those baits down there, those fish, they just couldn't handle it. You know, they'd come in on a string and just smash it every time. And I personally believe we still catch as many fish. You know, there's more people fishing for them. And you know, like I said, it's gained a lot of renown in those 12, 13 years that you know, we've really been pushing it. And there is a lot more people fishing it, but how many lakes in North America do you know of that produce probably 24 30-inch walleye every single day in a 4x18-mile area? I don't know of any.
Yeah, I think through the ice, you know, and this you know, conversation has been had, I'm sure, plenty, but it's like, yeah, I believe it's true that, you know, the big fish potential on Winnipeg through the ice is really bar none, like through the ice. And you can count on that season every year where you're located. And there's so many other great fisheries that you know, people can debate and talk about. But the size and scale of what Winnipeg offers is just, I think it's true. I think, you know, you could maybe name on one hand the bodies of water anywhere in North America that could produce, you know, for any one person or for, you know, 5,000 people, like you say, in, like, you know, on Winnipeg in March when there's that many people out there, every single person is rolling the dice with relatively the same odds of hooking into one of these fish that, you know, that's just world class and then some, you know, on anybody's standards. But yeah, like through the ice, I couldn't think of any. Somebody would just have to write in and tell me, you know, that I'm completely missing something here. But for that amount of people to, you know, to be out there and all have those kind of odds, there's that kind of potential exists on just a smaller scale, I think, is ultimately the deal in other places. Or it's just not as often, you know, one place that comes up, you know, it's like Lake Erie at times has year classes of fish that are just unbelievable, and they have, you know, tons of huge fish in it, right? But, you know, but the places like that don't, you know, they don't consistently get the ice. I mean, it's in when you think about the season that we're in right now, early ice, you know, these ice seasons that we're having, it's like, man, like, just, and for some people it might sound redundant that we just talk about how great the opportunity is, but I think we just need to almost, like, just pay homage to it. Like, it's like, we just, it's the GOAT. It's the MVP of big trophy walleye fishing destinations for, you know, anybody that can get there. I totally believe that. It's unbelievable. And it's, you know, and the fishing, it's just fun to get those fishing stories and just, you know, just the novelty of just how it's so unique from a walleye fishing perspective compared to anywhere else that we fish small spoons, and it's, you know, finesse fishing, clear water places, wherever and whenever anybody catches a big fish through the ice, you know, but up there, it's such a different deal with such cool potential, and it's just such a fun deal, and learning how to catch them and how to move around and find those pods of fish on that expansive, flat, structureless, you know, just, you know, maybe some discrete structure out there, but, like, it's not, the fishing out there is just not like anywhere else that you're, when you're trying to track down big, you know, just giant fish. And so it's so interesting.
The structure that we have there it's not really fish holding structure. What it does do, though, is push fish that are moving through, you know, a few feet over this way or a few feet over that way, just because there's small undulations. And, you know, anybody that knows walleye knows that those can make a big difference. And it's one thing that I've really noticed with the advent of live sonar now, that, you know, you always assumed that you were going to peel fish in, you know, with big flashy baits and big loud baits and whatnot, and if they're 6-7 feet away, they're going to find you, and they don't. I was shocked, you know, and we've watched this time and time again. If you are not on their path, they rarely make a move towards you. They come from any you know relevant distance. I mean, like 10 feet over.
Yeah.
They just don't. You know, and I always thought that, you know, going back to the introduction of rattle baits into, you know, into the Lake Winnipeg environment and whatnot, that was the biggest key, was that they were attracting fish. I don't think now, looking back, I don't think that's what it was. I think those fish were there, and it was just an aggressive, obnoxious enough bait that they would never turn it down. So they just hammered on it because they hadn't seen it. But I don't think it was, you know, the songbird that people thought it was calling fish in for miles. And I mean, especially you could see that on, you know, a Saturday in mid-March during spring break where there is a thousand couple people down there ripping rattle baits. Talk about jamming the radar. Where's that fish going to go?
You put your
ear to the ice. That's all you can hear down there is
you're
ripping rafts and live targets.
It's so crazy to see the crowds of people out there. It's like nothing else, you know, and like for somebody to say that everybody's out there fishing walleyes, it's just unbelievable. I want to spend a little bit of time talking about maybe some recommendations or just that preparation, like that mindset. If somebody's looking to come up here for the first time, maybe they're booking a trip ahead of time, they don't know what the weather's going to be. So, you know, talk about, you know, the potential of the weather or the conditions that it could be, you know, anytime in the winter up there. And what are some great pieces of advice to just give people to prepare themselves and their equipment and just their, you know, just their mental state, just their, you know, their mentals preparing for a trip up on Winnipeg?
Well, I mean, understand it's going to be cold. I mean, even for a lot of guys coming up from the south, even a mild day on Winnipeg is pretty cold. And even if it's mild air temperatures, if you get a little bit of north wind coming down 250 miles a lake, it's cold. And so I prepare yourself for that. So if you plan on, you know, going for broke and fishing outside and moving around and hole hopping, be prepared to be cold, you know, and make sure you do have good gear. The flip houses are great. I mean, those are great for being mobile, great for setting up in the wind. And we do get wind. It's not called big windy for nothing. We get a lot of bad wind. So I definitely recommend doing that. The other thing, I have two of everything. You know, if you and your buddies are coming up and you don't have a side-by-side or snowmobiles or anything, like, you know, or some kind of specialized ice vehicle, and you're just going to go out in trucks, which is totally fine. Just make sure that if you got four guys, take two trucks, because you can get yourself into trouble there. You know, there's always ridges and ice heaves or, you know, hidden pieces like that where you get jammed up. And especially if you have flat light on a big, you know, static environment like that of snow, you can't always tell what you're running into. So make sure you got two of everything and make sure stuff is strapped down. The lake is rough, and the lake is even looking rougher this year than I've seen it in a lot of years. We're making ice, but the top is pretty lumpy. Strap everything down. If you're pulling a sleigh behind any machine, make sure that everything is there in there is tight and nothing can move around, because it will break. It will break. Big Windy is famous for it. It will break everything.
The current conditions. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on out there right now and maybe some of the optimism for this season. You know, how much ice do you got up there? How much fishing is happening up there? And what are some things that we ought to know?
Well, I mean, going back to the year class, that's probably one of the most exciting things is our year classes coming up are spectacular. The average fish we're catching is like 23, 24 inches. Those are incredible fish, and they carry their weight really well here. You know, a 25 inch fish here is going to be 6.5, sometimes 7 pounds. And so our year classes coming up are going to be spectacular. So this year and the next 2 years are going to produce some absolutely incredible fishing with respect to trophy fish. And for anybody that doesn't know, all trophy fish on Winnipeg have to be released. That's fish over 28 inches need to be released. If you have each angler can keep four fish between 14 and 22 inches, but everything above that needs to go back home. So I know some people don't like having to do replicas of the trophy fish, but it's going to ensure that that opportunity is there for a long time to come for a lot of people. As far as conditions, like I said, it is shaping up to be pretty rough out there. So, I mean, make sure that your vehicles, whatever you're bringing, are equipped or can handle a little bit of rough ice. Grease those ball joints. You want to, and make sure those sleighs have good Hyphax on them, and that your stuff is kept real tight inside. There's a good 10, 12 inches of ice in most places. Come to about 1,000 yards off the shore, pretty well all the way around from the common access point, starting at like Warner Road and Chalet Beach, going around to the east side. The east side is looking quite a bit better in terms of ice quality. The west side from Winnipeg Beach is looking pretty rough. But there's lots of good fishing. My guys just out there the other day, they caught 30, 40 fish just in a few hours, just taking ATVs out. So there's lots of fishing to be had, lots of trophy fish cruising around the river. What happens a lot right now is we're just starting to see our first fish, push a fish dumping out of the Red River. And that's what gives us our big January swing, is a lot of those fish coming out of the river and back into the lake. And there's still really good fishing in the river. So if people want to come up right now and go try the Red River, there's spectacular fishing to be had there. But right now it's going to be that migration of fish out of there coming into the South Basin and starting to fill those shorelines. And that's a lot of, if you look at some of our January photos, or people's January photos, the real, real pale greenbacks, emerald back, but very white, light-sided, like almost translucent yellowish fins. Those are all river fish kind of dumping back out from the Red River into the South Basin.
Timing wise, we're doing really good here, Matt. And I think that, more than anything, if anybody has any questions, reach out to you, specific questions on gear or lures or just, anything like that. We'll just wrap it up like this, man. Just promote yourself, or if anybody does have those kind of questions or wants to inquire about your guide business a little bit more, where can they find you? Where can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, well, the typical, the typical social platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Bruin Outfitting, which is our running gun ice fishing division, Bruin Outfitting and Guide Service on Facebook and on Instagram. Icebound Excursions is our Snow Bear division, so you can find them Facebook, Instagram as well. Our www.bruinoutfitting.com, that's the website, and you'll find everything on there. Feel free to reach out. Ask any questions. If you guys have questions about trips, availability, or anything, by all means, just shoot.
Dude, I love it, man. I love hearing about your career, your story, and I did not know that you started your career way up on Great Bear. Oh my gosh, that is a bucket list of all time bucket lists for a guy like me to go up and catch Lakers up there.
Oh, dude, it was a wild place. Because we did all. Caribou hunts, muskox hunts,